Yo, this episode of The Real Deal with a Kill is brought to you by Petite Law Firm. If you have a car accident, going through a divorce, you need somebody to help you or review your contracts, call Petite Law Firm at 281-227-7883. Again, that's 281-227-7883. Just got done watching the Nipsey Hussle funeral today, like most of the people did in this world. I think the world stopped. The funeral came, and I've been just jamming Nipsey since he passed, and just realizing, like, telling myself, like, damn, why wasn't I listening to Nipsey before he passed? I'm like, you know how somebody die, you know, like a musician or artist or whatever, rapper, a singer, you try to understand, like, okay, let me go listen to some of that person's music to understand, like, why was this person liked or whatever. And I'm listening. Sometimes you got to, like, try to force yourself to listen to somebody's music and be like, I'm sorry that person passed away, but I'm not really feeling that person's music. But with Nipsey, it's like, I was listening to Victory Lap when it came out. I liked it a lot. But then I go back, listen to his old music and understand why people liked him so much. Like, this man really was very good at music, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, why wasn't I listening to him? And it just sucks because it's like, once it takes somebody to die to finally not say hop on a bandwagon per se, but support the music and go back to listen to Sloss and Boy 2 and Crenshaw and Marathon Continues and all that, and want to buy his clothes and order online and everything. And watching that funeral, I'm not going to lie, I almost teared up. I almost teared up watching it, watching Lauren London speak, Snoop Dogg, YG, his mom, his brother, everybody. Like, this one is, like, different. You know, like I said on my last episode, I wasn't around when Pac and Biggie died. But I didn't think this death would have this much impact to a point to sell out Staples Center. Because the last person that did that was an icon, was a great. His name was Michael Jackson. Nipsey had one album, multiple mixtapes. But to sell out the Staples Center, 20,000 plus, I'm like, ugh. That's why I said on my last show, this death is more shocking and bigger than Pac and Biggie. Because of the situation and because of the impact he left. It's like when Tupac died, he planted the seed almost. You know, he wanted to do things for the community and where he was from. But he died young. He died, he didn't even see 30 years old. But Nipsey took what Pac said and just executed the plan, but couldn't fulfill it all the way through. And I think now somebody... this person might not be on earth right now. It might be 25, 30 years from now. The person going to take what Nipsey was doing and fulfill the execution, fulfill the plan. And I think that's what Nipsey was doing with Tupac. There's going to be Nipsey is our Tupac. And in the next generation, there's going to be another Nipsey. And it's just crazy that, you know, we have to support the man after he passed away, you know. And it's crazy. I'm from Houston. I'm born and raised from here. I love doing what I'm doing. And our city, we have our own Nipsey Hussle. But he's banned from radio out here. His name is Trader Truth. He's banned from his own city on radio. But the goodness of his heart, he gives back to his own city. Trey Day. The Harvey Relief Gang, all the events he throw, everything he does, the city's not telling him to do it. It's him giving back to the city for the goodness of his heart. And that's what Nipsey was doing in L.A. So watching the funeral, watching all of that is like, man, like, it's a lie. And I know, John, you was at work. I don't know if you had the time to probably even look at it right now. While he was at work, but I'm pretty sure you heard about it, you know,
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I didn't get to watch the whole funeral, but I got to watch several clips. You know, I was kind of tuning in and out, and what I saw was just so moving. I mean, like you said, to have that many people, you know, from that community. I mean, that's the thing. It's like a lot of times you have people from all over, but his community held him down. I mean, he was neighborhood Nip, you know, and so I think that that's something that really spoke volumes, that it was like he never, ever, ever really forgot where he came from, even as he was coming up. And I think, too, the thing I loved, it, like, when sometimes people die, especially musicians, it's so much focused on their music. And like you said, his music is something that we should all go back and listen to if we haven't. But I liked it. His activism was equally at the forefront. People talked about the things he did. It wasn't just, okay, I gave out, you know, back to school backpacks or free haircuts. But, like, the stuff he did actually had lasting impact, you know, sustainable housing, you know, working, you know, as an entrepreneur to, like, buy property in his own neighborhood to, you know, to give back in that way. So I think that's something we all can learn, is that, you know, giving back is not just about doing a one-time thing and being an activist, but, like, doing stuff that you can leave a legacy with.
Right. And it's, so, I was watching it today, and I was watching the pastor that got on. I think he was one of the last ones to speak, if not the last person to speak. Mm-hmm. He said something that was very interesting to me. He said, Nipsey is like McDonald's. You see, you notice McDonald's don't try to go at anybody else, but it's other restaurants trying to go at McDonald's because they got the Big Mac. Everybody trying to get the big car, the Big King, the Big Jack. Everything try to go towards McDonald's and try to go after them. But McDonald's don't try to go after nobody else. And it's not the burgers that make McDonald's great. It's the fries.
That's true.
And the apple pies and everything. That's what he's saying about Nipsey. Everybody can rap. Anybody can get in front of the microphone and say a few lyrics and a few bars and a chorus. But what makes you special? And I think that's not even just rap. That's anything.
Yeah.
That's like when you're an anchor. Mm-hmm. Everybody want to be a TV anchor, news anchor. There's thousands of them.
Yeah. But makes you stand out and makes you special, right?
Makes you special. It's like radio. It's an athlete. That's anything. And I think that's what, when the pastor said, I said, man, that's really true, because what makes that person special? What makes somebody TV show special? What makes somebody radio show special? You know, what's the extra mile you take, you know, giving back to the community? Not a lot of rappers do that. And I don't want to sound harsh when I say this, but it's like, there's not a lot of rappers that are going to have that impact now. Nipsey wasn't known as the best rapper worldwide. People say Drake, Kendrick, J. Cole, Big Sean, whoever you want to say. Nipsey was never like profound. Oh, Nipsey's number one. Mm-hmm. As soon as you think of that person. But the community doing everything else, it's like his legacy is going up by the day. To where, like, you can't even say he's on a Mount Rushmore rap. He's like on another level above rap. Yeah. You know, you put him on the Malcolms, the Martin Luther Kings, the Gandhis, the Alis. You put him on that level. You know,
being remembered for his service, like his service, people aren't talking about, oh, yeah, we know he had, you know, his affiliation with a gang at some point, you know, but people aren't talking about that because that's not what defined him.
Right.
And so many people allow, when they talk about rappers, even I love that the mainstream media is covering him. And it's not like, oh, just that rapper from L.A., from Crenshaw. Like, no, people are talking about him as a bona fide activist. And I mean, the fact that I've been watching some of the coverage in L.A. and I have friends who work out in L.A. and news. And this is a big story still. And it has been for the last couple of weeks for them. Like, this is just like, let's cover this and move on. It's a big story, a big deal, and I'm just glad to see that he's being remembered in that way.
Yeah, and I'm glad everybody's doing it, you know, but I can say I'm glad it wasn't on TV because it was a lot of cussing, but hey, that didn't bother me.
Hey
but that's the emotions letting out.
Yeah.
You know, Snoop Dogg, YG.
Raw, yeah.
It's raw, and that's what you like. Yeah. You, when it's streaming, it's like, okay, I'm glad it wasn't on TV, you know, but I'm glad that everybody held it strong, you know.
Yeah.
I thought Lauren London was going to lose it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had some time to, you know, say what you had to say and all these other things and kind of get over it in a certain way. But it was just like, man, it makes you just think, like, he puts you on another level. Like, it's Gandhi's, the Malcolms, he had the Nation of Islam at his funeral. Farrakhan, Stevie Wonder.
The president was tweeting
president
about
Obama.
Him.
President
Obama. Yeah, President Obama, yeah. So, he touched a lot of people. Sure.
Yeah, so I just want to. So I just wanted to get that out the way of Nipsey. But let's get to you, because met you, was that a week ago, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, a few weeks ago at an event, yeah.
Hermes event. I knew him for, high school.
Man, yeah, he's doing his thing. Proud of him.
Yeah, he has, to me, the best clothing line out. Yeah. You know, it's going to be. The world's going to see us real soon. And I met you, I think we probably glanced.
We saw each other briefly at
NABJ. Yeah. NABJ and Black Journalist. Detroit. You going to Miami, right?
I'm planning to be there. I hear it's going to be good. So, you know.
Oh, goodness. I'm getting prepared now.
Yeah.
I got to buy suits. I got my room. I'm trying to get my flight. I do a lot of things to it because it's not cheap.
Yeah. By the way, NABJ is the National Association of Black Journalists. It's where all the folks in TV, radio, print, we get together. Yep. You know, and it's just one big, it's like the best party.
Yeah, it is.
Everybody is like, just let the hair down, and everybody's just. It's just a good time.
Because you don't get a lot of breaks.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of breaks, and you always got to be on and professional. But when we go to these things, we have our seminars during the day.
Yeah.
And then it's like, at night, no telling what happens.
So you born and raised from Atlanta.
Yeah, man, born and raised in Atlanta. That's home for me. I love Houston. I've been here for 3 years now, but Atlanta is where, you know, I was born and raised. You know, a lot of people always say, like, yeah, I'm from Atlanta, but they're not really from Atlanta. But, like, I was born in Atlanta. Yeah. And that's still where my family is. That's where my roots are.
Yeah.
So that's my home. I still love. I still love going back and visiting.
Right. But I can say that I feel like you are one of the best anchors on TV right now.
Man.
Just by watching, you know, glancing at the news and looking at your stuff, I'm like, man, this is dope.
Man,
you know?
I appreciate it. I just try to do what I do. That's a huge compliment because you know, there's a lot of talented people here in Houston. Who do their thing. There are a lot of people here in Houston who I admire who've been doing this for like 20, 30 years. Right. So I just try to, you know, give my little piece to the puzzle, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, and just watching a lot of people. And I know a couple of guys I want to shout out, Theo Dorsey.
Oh, that's my boy. Yeah, Theo.
Man, I'm going to tell you a story. He actually put me on to journalism.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, he's the guy that introduced me to this world. I was trying to play ball somewhere.
Theo actually texted me today. He texted me today because he just started his job in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And he sent me his first story. And he was like, what you think about this? I was like, man, this was good. Like, so, you know, I tell people the world is so small.
Right.
You know, I met Theo a while ago, and I'm just proud to see him kind of moving up in the industry. And he's a good guy. And he's from Houston.
You're same area, Missouri City. We both in the same city. We grew up basically almost together. So a lot of people want to know this, too. And I'm not in the anchor field, but like people don't realize how hard it is to be. You just can't wake up one day and be like, hey, I want to be an anchor now. I want to go to the biggest city. Because it's so hard to start off, you know, graduate college and then start off, I'm start off in LA, New York, Houston.
Yeah.
People don't realize how hard that is.
It is hard. And the thing about it is, it's funny because since I was a little boy, I was probably like 7 or 8 years old. I always knew that I wanted to be a news anchor, be a journalist. Right. And there's like videos of me with my brother, and we would be literally, I had my dad pull out the camcorder and he would record me doing the news. I would make up stories or I would just, you know, act like I was reading stuff. But anyway, there's still, obviously, if you look at the trajectory and the path, not many people actually get to that point in the large market to anchor. So I count it as a blessing. So, you know, I left college, I went to Auburn University, and I, started my career in Augusta, Georgia as like a reporter beating the streets. And that's the thing a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, anchoring, they think it's like the cushy job. You know, you're behind the desk, you kind of chill. But at the end of the day, I tell people, like, I was out in the streets, in the snow, in the rain, reporting for many years and learning how to be a good reporter before I even got a chance to anchor. So
And then you have to edit yourself, too.
Yeah, a lot of times I've been blessed that I haven't had to do a lot of editing in my career so far. But the way the business is now, like, you have to learn how to do everything. You got to learn how to shoot, how to edit, how to write. You can no longer just be that anchor who sits behind the desk and reads for 30 minutes or an hour. They want you to know how to do everything in case you have to. So,
and I know you say Auburn, so I want to send my condolences to you.
Oh, man.
About God did pick y'all in my bracket,
man,
to go against Duke.
I was devastated. That game, though, we were cheated. That game. I mean... You know, I was going to say I'm not a sore loser because I am a sore loser.
Yeah.
But that was – to lose that way, I mean, to me, that was a whole – I'm still not over it.
I know. I feel your pain.
But, hey, it was our first Final Four appearance ever for our school. So for me, hey, it's just Bruce Pearl, the team, you know, I think it was just an incredible historic season anyway. So. Yeah.
So guide me right now. So you went to Auburn. How long did it take for you to land a job in the field?
Okay, so I was blessed because I went to school at Auburn, but that summer of my senior year, I was an intern at WSB in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and that's where I would come in there morning, noon, night, weekends to put together my resume tape. I would buy lunch for the directors and the people who would help me. I was just so determined that I was not going to be one of those people who had like a break after college and be sitting at home and waiting for a job. So I put together my reel, and then Augusta, Georgia came calling like probably like 2 months before I graduated. And they were like, come to Augusta and interview. And Augusta, if you don't know much about Augusta, that's where they're playing the Masters right now. It's also home to James Brown. It's, you know, sort of a small town east of Atlanta. And that's where I started out, man. So I was blessed like right out of college. I literally, right after, you know, Auburn, I went straight to Augusta. It was like no break.
So was that the time when you interviewed James Brown?
Yeah, so I got to interview James Brown when I was in Augusta, my very first job. It's crazy because I still to this day think back. I'm like, man, I was the last person to talk to this icon. Because, you know, there's certain people who are celebrities, but there are certain people who are like celebrities to celebrities. And like James Brown is up there with like the Michael Jacksons and like Aretha Franklin's, people who people look at like, man, this is like a true influencer. So, yeah, I got to interview him there, and just an incredible man. I mean, he just carried himself like an entertainer. Like, you were almost scared to talk to him.
Right.
Because
was you nervous when you?
I was so nervous to talk to him because James Brown, while he was a nice man, he was a very nice, generous, giving person. But you couldn't just go up to him and, like, get to him like, hey, you know, Mr. Brown. Like, you had to kind of, like, go through a channel. So I knew his daughter, Deanna. And I was like, Deanna, like, can I interview your dad? Like, and I thought she was going to say no because he didn't just do interviews with everybody.
Right.
And sure enough, he agreed to it. And I remember asking him, you know, first thing, you know, I said, Mr. Brown, you know, Mr. James Brown, how are you feeling? He said, I'm all right. And you could just see that he was weak. He was frail. And then he died the next day. So literally hours after our interview. And I was just blessed that I had the opportunity to talk to him and meet him and interview him on several occasions.
Did he look small? Did he look like?
Yeah, he looked very small, very frail. You could tell that he wasn't his best. And I think he had ended up getting sick that next day. So anyway, I look back at like, people ask me like, who's the coolest person or the biggest person you've ever interviewed? And I always say James Brown. Like, one of my very first big interviews was one of my biggest. Because I just look back, I don't know if anybody bigger in terms of entertainment I've talked to.
How old was you at the time? This is like 20.
Yeah, I was like 20. Yeah, like right out of college. So what is that? Are you like 20, like 22, 23?
Man,
yeah,
that young interviewing James Brown.
I was nervous, man.
You had
like,
to.
I was nervous. I'm like, this is James Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So then after, how long did you stay at Augusta until you moved on to your next city?
So I worked in Augusta for 2 years. And after Augusta, I moved on to Nashville, Tennessee. They came calling and they said, hey, we want you to, you know, come. And I knew, you know, Augusta's a great city, but you knew that was, I remember I was making like $20,000 a year, 20, and this was like years ago. So I was like, Dad, I need some money. Like, my dad was helping me pay. And so I knew I needed to get into a bigger market where I was going to make some real money.
Right.
So I moved to Nashville, Tennessee and worked there for like 5 or 6 years and had a, you know, a good time there because Nashville, if people think, they think Nashville, they think just country music or they think like it's just, you know, country town. I mean, yeah, it's a lot of country music, but it's a lot going on in the city. And I had a really good time there. And that's when I really like got my chops to like get to be good. I think you know, I kind of learned how to really be a journalist there.
Yeah. And then while you at Nashville, was there any bumps in the road from Augusta to Nashville in that time? Because usually I ask that because, all right, you have 2 years. Because usually sometimes when they start, like, at a small market,
mm-hmm.
and Augusta's really not even that small, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's not the smallest city. I mean, but it's definitely not.
It's not top 50, right?
Oh, nah. Augusta, I think at the time, I don't know what it is now, but at the time, Augusta was, like, market 114.
Yeah.
So it's still, compared to most U.S. cities, you know, like, it's not the smallest, but it's, like, right there. And, like,
usually people take, like, when I talk to people, they take like 3-4 years, and then they make that transition to to the top 50.
Yeah.
So was you surprised that you made that jump so fast? Because 2 years is like,
yeah, I mean,
pretty damn good.
Because I remember Augusta market 114, and then moving up to Nashville, which was like market 30. I was like, whoa, like I'm about to move up to a big market. And I remember coming in there, I was like one of the youngest people. And I remember not knowing everything, but I was really eager to learn. And I knew, I kind of always knew what I wanted to do. And I mean, I've always been hungry. So I got in there, I learned. I remember working the mornings, the weekends. I mean, they had me everywhere, but I was willing to do it. And it was, you know, I ended up there getting promoted to anchor weekend mornings. Like, you know, that's kind of like the entry level anchoring. So I was the weekend morning person, and it was good.
So after Nashville, was it New Orleans?
Yeah. So after Nashville, I worked there for like 6 or 7 years, and I went to work for a national network that was starting out called Al Jazeera America. I worked there where we did like some really hardcore journalism. And then that ended up closing down. And then Houston came calling. Like, it was crazy because when that network was ending, and then suddenly I get a call from Houston, hey, we want to interview you. I had never even thought to come to Houston. It's not like Houston was on my radar. I always knew Houston was a cool city, but in my mind, it was just not a place that I had thought to come. So I came and interviewed, and literally that next day, the general manager said, we think you're our guy. Like, we don't interview anywhere else. Don't go anywhere else. Don't make a decision. Like, he was like, we want you. And I remember just kind of shaking because I'm thinking, what, you want me as the lead anchor in Houston? Like, I almost couldn't believe it. You know, sometimes we don't think that we're ready or worthy for an opportunity. But it was a hell of an opportunity to come here. And I said, let me come on.
When you came, was this your first time in Houston, or you visited before?
I had visited Houston, but I had never really gotten to, like, spend time in Houston for real. And, but, you know, because, you know, it's a difference, like, coming to Houston for a weekend. Just like when people say, oh, I've been to Atlanta. I'm like, but, okay, you just spent one weekend in Atlanta, but you don't really know Atlanta. Yeah. So I didn't know Houston for real. Right. But, man, this city has just, like, been so great and taken to me and been so supportive. Man, it's been 3 years. I'm like, it's been 3 years since I've been here in Houston, and it's gone so fast.
Right.
But it's a blessing. Like, I love your hometown, so, I mean, it's amazing.
You gotta love it out here.
Yeah, man, it's crazy because when people talk about Houston and they say, man, you know, what's there to do in Houston? Or, you know, why do you love Houston? And I can't really articulate why I love this city.
Yeah.
I can't articulate, say, oh, you gotta go here, or it's because of the food. But it's just like, it's when you're here, you know it, and you get it. But it's hard to articulate to other people. I'm just like, just come. And when you come, you'll get what I'm talking about.
It's kind of like Atlanta in a way. It's like Atlanta and Houston is like siblings almost.
You think so?
Because in a way, okay, I'm 25. So I'm still in that little nightlife phase, right?
Okay.
So in a way, Atlanta and Houston almost resembles themselves. Like the women, the nightlife. It's always something to do. Atlanta's smaller than Houston. So it's like that cousin, that baby cousin.
Really? Don't get me wrong. I love Houston, and I love Atlanta because that's my hometown. But I wouldn't say Atlanta is like a baby cousin. I mean, many people would say that Atlanta is like the city.
Yeah,
like,
in some ways.
Because, I mean, Atlanta, you know, in terms of entertainment, in terms of music, in terms of big events. I mean, hell, Atlanta hosted the Olympics in 96. I mean, Houston, I think, is a great city, and I like it because it's the people, it's the diversity, it's the food, we don't try to be anything more than what we are here in Houston.
Right.
But I will still say Atlanta in many ways is a city that is ahead in when you talk about like industry.
Industry.
I mean, but I love both cities, so I don't want to be accused of like being like, wait, go back to Atlanta.
Yeah, my sister lives in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But I went out there, I was 13, 14, mm-hmm. so I didn't get I can say this though. The fashion, what we wearing now, Atlanta was wearing that years ago. Like, I'm like, yo, like, we still wearing baggy jeans shorts in like 07, 06.
And oh, for real?
Atlanta was like wearing like what we wearing now. I'm like, what? Like, how's this?
You said Atlanta is wearing.
So basically, it was like 07. I remember I was in the mall. I was 14 at the time. And I have on, I have on South Pole. Right? In 14 years old, and people's wearing like it wasn't almost to what we were wearing now, like the smaller clothes, But it's like the fashion was very different. I'm like, what are they wearing? Yeah. You know? And like Atlanta was doing it like in 07. Like they've been on top of the game.
Well, I think Atlanta leads the way when it comes to fashion, especially for black folks, music, and in just the entertainment industry. I mean, it's such a hub there that I think that a lot of times, I remember even growing up, I mean, you know, I would listen to V103 and you would hear like a Ludacris song or a Monica song or like Usher before the rest of the world would hear it. So it's kind of like Atlanta has always sort of gotten a taste of the culture before a lot of other places have. But I think it's cool, though, in Houston that, as I said, I don't think we try to be anything more than we are. I feel like, to be honest, a lot of times, I'm going to be honest, Atlanta, you know, because I got folks there, it can be a little pretentious. It can be a little bit about what you have, what you're driving, what side of town you live on.
It's like an L.A. type.
But what kind of car. And I never have gotten that in Houston. I don't think people, like, look at what you're pulling up in, or they don't look at, like, hey, do you live on the north side or the gallery? Or just, I mean, I don't feel like people really care as much about the image in Houston as I feel like they do in some other cities. So that's why I like it, because it really is not like, you can be yourself. You can walk up in here in a suit. You can walk up in here in a t-shirt and you can go to Galleria. You can go to River Oaks and nobody's looking at you like you don't belong here.
Yeah. I heard my brother was in LA not too long ago, and then he was saying that, the people there is like, if you're not wearing Balenciagas or whatever, they're going to look at you weird like, oh, I'm not going to talk to you because you don't have this on or that on. They judge you out there. Houston, I could walk right here in hooping shorts in the Galleria. That's the biggest mall we have in Houston.
Yeah.
In Texas, almost. And it's like, you could walk in there with flip-flops on with no socks and buy what you want to buy, and nobody's going to say anything.
They're not going
to
say a word to you. Yep.
Exactly. And that's the one thing I can say. And it's something to do every single day in Houston. There's not a dull night at all. Like, I go out sometimes. I'm still in college.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting out in a month. You know, so I'm getting, you know, I go out to go to sports bars, watch games and all of that. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's something to do. Like, somebody asked me, like, hey, what's to do? I give, like, a full schedule to what to do from Monday to Sunday.
Wow.
And that's the great thing I love about Houston, you know. And that's why I say, in some ways, Houston and Atlanta have similarities. But the one thing I can say about Atlanta is that they have each other back when it comes to music. Mm. It's like they never had a dull moment when it came to music. Like, it's always, they had, like, an era. You have the Future, you have the Young Thugs, you have the Gucci Mane. Everybody support each other.
Yeah.
You know.
You don't feel like that they do that in Houston as much?
And I, hell no. Hell, capital H-E-L-L. You know, and I said it too. Trader Truth is banning his own city on radio.
Well, other than Trader Truth, though, who else do you think? I mean, I know Bun B, I know Slim, I know a lot of these guys. And for the most part, I see them kind of stick together. Like when there's... Like when they had the Nipsey Memorial, everybody came together. Even though that was Trey's event, I mean, you see everybody show up. I mean, so I at least will say that they are visible in the community.
Right. This is what I'm going to say. It's kind of a reason why, like Travis Scott, if he never left to go under Kanye West's wing, and he just stayed in Houston, never moved, he wouldn't be the Travis Scott that he is now. He had to leave the city. We had an era, like from like 05 to like 07, where Paul Wall, Bun B, Slim Thug come in there. They all dropped the album. Slim Thug, Mike Jones dropped an album around that same time. Mm-hmm. Zero dropped Most City Don, and everybody was on Houston bandwagon. Pimp C, you know, that God rest his soul, that everybody was on this. It was riding for Houston, you know, and then now it's like we have a gap where, like, it was a part in time where, like, the older guys wasn't rocking with the newer guys in Houston, and people not supporting each other. And it's just the fact that, you know, Houston could be we can be mainstream right now. We can be like the Atlantas, like the New Yorks and the LAs.
You don't think just not enough cohesiveness in terms of the support of the artists?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, we have some good artists here. But like I said, my favorite era was the 05 with Kamin there, and Trey the Truth was still young. You had the Zero, everybody it was all riding together. And then now it's like,
it's a little
different now. It's kind of a gap because it's like the older generation is trying to relate to the younger generation of Houston, you know. And it's like a gap right there because that transition that was from the late 90s with the Big Mo's and the ESGs and everybody else.
Yeah.
DJ Screw, they carried on to the Pimp C's. They carried on to the Slim and the Commissioners and all them guys. And they could relate to each other in a certain way. But yeah. Then, like, the music now, it's like a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And they trying to relate, like, man, this isn't Houston.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What sound is this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of that gap. It's like where the lack of support is coming from. You know, and me just being born and raised, I'm like, man, I wish our city could be, like,
yeah.
a little bit better yeah. when it comes to that. Because, it's like, sometimes we're always putting each other down and we need somebody.
Yeah.
Either where.
That's a good point. I think that's a good point. And I think
right.
something that is kind of, I think people realize it, but nobody's willing to step forward and do anything about it.
Yeah.
Everybody's just cool with it being kind of how it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, you know, and that's why I wanted this show the way it is now. You know, I didn't want it to, you know, just be like a sports show. Cause that's my field. I love sports a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wanted to challenge myself and have a unique format to a show where, you know, podcasting is growing.
Yeah.
You know, on our radio is like kind of dying in a sense where a lot of people is just streaming stuff and, you know, listen to their music. But me being a younger guy and being in this generation, podcast was the way to go. And yeah. I want to help as much as I can to the city.
That's good,
and
man.
To put everybody together and, you know, have some type of impact.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If Trader Truth is listening right now, trust me, you're not banned on my show.
Yeah, got to have
you're not banned on my radio show, buddy, on my podcast. I will want you in this chair because, like I said, he's one of my favorite rappers.
Yeah, he's a good guy, too.
He
does a lot. Yeah.
And for him to – that's why I said this Nipsey thing, and I know I'm keep going back to Nipsey because it's so, you know, it's still on my mind a little bit, but it's like he's banned in his own city. You know, like, God forbid, what if something happened to Nipsey? Well, to Trader Truth. And then what's going to happen? We all going to ride for him, huh? That's what we're all going to do. We're going to ride for him.
Hope so.
But guess what? He was banned on radio in his own city. You know, and that's almost unheard of. And he's still giving back. So it's like,
yeah.
And that's why I say when, because I had that question asked me before about, like, you don't think people support IG? I'm like, nah, like, because it could be better. Mm-hmm. I know what the city can be. You know, and it just sucks that people have to leave to become what they are
what they can be.
As artists, you know, and it's just bad. But this show is brought to you by Petite Law Firm. Been in a car wreck, you're going through a divorce, if you need someone to look over your contract, you got written. Well, don't look any further than Petite Law Firm. Petite Law Firm can handle all that and much more with just one phone call. 281-227-7883. Again, that's 281-227-7883. Petite Law Firm. But yeah, man, I just don't think that this city could be so much better. For it to be like the number one diverse city too.
Yeah.
People, I mean, in America, like people don't realize like we are really, really diverse.
Oh, we are diverse. And I tell people that is one of my favorite things about Houston. Cause you know, every city wants to claim that it's diverse.
Right.
Houston, I mean, even if you look at our leadership, I mean, from our mayor to our police chief to our DA to superintendent, even that just covers so much in terms of every different group and demographic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing I love about Houston, that you can walk into any store, any mall, any place, and there are going to be people who look like you and there are going to be people who don't look like you. And I love that Houston, at least I don't feel like you can call it a black city. I don't think you could call it a white city or even necessarily a Hispanic city. I think it's just like a city where everybody is represented. And that's what's so cool about it. I love that. I don't love just being around people that just look like me. Like
right.
Some people love that. And so I love when I walk around Houston, you don't know who you're going to see and everybody just is accepting and everybody can like succeed and win here. I love that.
Yeah. It's like a city of one.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I love. Cause there's so many things to do. So many places to go.
Yep.
And it's so huge. Like it's so,
I feel bad because I've been here 3 years and there's so many places in Houston I still have not seen. Because
right.
it's just so big. And I think sometimes, you know, I live inside the Loop and, you know, in the Galleria area. So I get kind of spoiled because everything I need is right there. And I'm like, oh, man. Like, and then somebody will say, have you gone to this restaurant here or going there? And I just haven't been because there's so much out there.
Yeah. It's a lot of restaurants.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And you got downtown.
Yeah.
You have Sugarland. You have the North Side. It's just so many places. And I just think it's about proximity.
Yeah.
To me personally, I would rather live where closer to my job.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't see how some, I mean, I understand some people, especially they have like a family or big family, like they want to live out where they can get more bang for their buck. But some people I know, like I have a coworker, several coworkers that live in the Woodlands, and they drive, like, I mean, their commute home sometimes is like hour 20 easy every day.
And that's without traffic.
Oh, yeah. And so on a bad traffic day, hour 30, hour 45. To and from. I'm like, man.
Dude, you going from here to Austin.
Like, yeah, that's like a whole nother city.
Come on, man.
That's a whole.
Come on. That's like the DMV area. That's, you can go to three states.
Yeah.
In an hour 45. Yeah. It takes you an hour 45 to get out of one, to go to one
man.
End of the city. To
and
another.
I'm such an impatient person
there's
no way I can sit in traffic for an hour every day.
I can't do it.
I would just.
I'll lose it.
Yeah,
like I it would turn me into a road rage person. I'm not that guy.
Yeah,
it would turn me. I don't know if you played Grand Theft Auto.
I did. I used to when I was younger. Yeah,
like I will be driving like that if I was driving like every day, an hour and a half in traffic.
But some people, they're used to it. And they don't mind that, you know, put on a CD. You know, you talk on the phone, do what you got to do, and
This I want to ask you too. I just want to ask a TV anchor this question. The stories y'all be having, because most of the sometimes it be, you know, the people dying, you know, would y'all look at a story and be like, man, are you kidding me? Like, for example, my homegirl does KHOU. She does her name Janelle.
I know Janelle. Yeah, that's my girl. Y'all, I love Janelle. Yeah,
she did a story today that a man got shot and killed in the shower. Like, when y'all see stories like that, what goes through your mind? Because I know it's like, oh, man, okay, you got to do this story. But it's like, do you be like, are you serious?
I mean, really happened? Sometimes the stories are crazy. And, I mean, like, obviously, it's Houston. We live in a big city, so we can't cover every shooting, well, you know, we don't have the kind of crime like Chicago or you know, some of the other big cities do. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, there's sometimes we cover stuff, and we're just like, okay, that – But I think sometimes it's when something is unique. Like, sometimes we may not cover just a friend shot another friend. But if there's, is something deeper to it, or, you know, or something that's interesting, or something that's kind of, like, outrageous, and that we think will pique people's interest, like, that's what sometimes gets the radar of the producers or, you know, the people who are deciding on the coverage.
Man died in the shower. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
That's the worst. You died naked, dog.
Yeah.
Like, dog, them bullet wounds. Man. To your body, you naked, you in the shower. First of all, the water's already hot. And then it makes the cut even worse because you get, it burns.
I don't even want to. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you hear so many crazy stories in this business that it's funny because now there's little that gets me like, whoa. Like there's little that makes me kind of perk up because you just hear it all.
Yeah.
You see it all, you hear it all, and sometimes you just shake your head, and on camera, you have to keep your face looking like.
What's the craziest story you ever?
That's so many crazy stories. You're going to have to come back to me on that one because.
Well, okay, not ever. Let's say the time you've been. Well, let's say Houston.
I'm trying to think Houston, man. We don't get like the real crazies. Like, we don't get the.
So, which city that you've been at gets like most of the crazy stories?
I definitely will say when I worked in New Orleans,
New Orleans.
That was the craziest because New Orleans would have the kind of crime you like for real. Like, somebody would just shoot up a playground and 10 kids, you know, were hit by stray bullets. Like, we don't have that kind of crime.
We
in
don't.
Houston. Like, I mean, if someone gets shot in Houston, it's usually a domestic situation
or
husband, wife, or someone, you know, who knew somebody. We just don't have the kind of crime where you're just walking down the street and getting hit. So for me in New Orleans, I love that city so much, but it was one of those things like, man, just the crime here is just, it made me even fearful, like sometimes going out because you would hear gunshots.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we have a police shortage here, but there, they have a real, real police shortage where it's to the point where response times are so bad and the shortage is so bad. So there were even some reports that women had been raped and police didn't show up till the next day.
Oh, man.
That if you got in a car accident and it wasn't life or death, the police might not show up for 2, 3, 4, 5 days. So, I mean, it is bad. And so the kind of stories you hear, you think about even just that. Like
that down Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
The police officers party on Bourbon Street. Yeah. That's why they don't show up 2-3 days later.
Nah. I'm not saying all that.
I'm saying all that. My family's from New Orleans.
But you know how New Orleans is. Like, I love New Orleans. I mean, and that's the thing, man. I will tell you, I made some lifelong friends there, and it is one of the best cities, not just because of the food or not. I mean, like, New Orleans, like, the people are some of the best people you ever will meet. Like, they immediately embrace you. Even if you're not from there, they'll be quick to say, you ain't from here, are you? And I'm like, nah. But once you actually get in the space,
right,
they will love you, embrace you, but it's not a place you kind of want to stay your whole life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Was it difficult living in New Orleans?
Yeah. I mean, I love New Orleans, but I think New Orleans is one of those places that it just has so many challenges that it's like, I mean, you know, I understand, like, right after Katrina, it was a different story. Like, I think now New Orleans living is a lot easier, but I just think it's not as, for me personally, and I say this, I hope I don't offend anybody, but I just feel like New Orleans wasn't as progressive as I wanted it to be. Like, you got people,
I feel
like,
you on that.
Moving, shaking, people doing the thing,
right.
People, like, owning businesses and, like, just kind of climbing the ladder. I feel like they have that in New Orleans,
right.
But Houston is, I think, on another level when it comes sort of to that progression. Right.
And you covered Harvey too. Was you affected by Harvey?
I was not personally affected by Harvey. I was blessed that I wasn't. But I mean, Hurricane Harvey to me was one of the hardest stories to cover because I think sometimes we cover news and it just affects like a neighborhood here or it affects this person there, and then you forget about it the next day. Harvey, I think, was one of those stories where literally everybody in Houston was affected in some way, like whether it was directly or indirectly, whether it was your house or your friend's house or your mama's house or something was shut down because of Harvey, you know.
Right.
And anyway, like, to me, it was crazy because we anchored for, like, 20 hours. Like, we would go and work for, like, 12 hours, sleep at the station for a few hours, wake back up and anchor. It was a nonstop covering that, a nonstop marathon. And I remember going to bed one night and realizing, wow, this is not just bad. This is horrible. Like, this is going to change people's lives forever and change the city forever. So I would say Hurricane Harvey is probably the biggest event I've ever covered because I don't think any of us knew how bad it was going to be.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you that too, because how was it that the days leading up to it? Because I heard about, so my brother called me on that Wednesday. And remember, that's the same week as Mayweather McGregor.
Yeah.
Me and like probably thousands of people trying to get prepared for a fight party. He called me Wednesday. He says, Akil, I don't think we're having this fight party. I said, what are you talking about? Man, turn to the weather channel. I think we're about to have a hurricane. And I said, what? Go to, I think, the weather channel. So I went to some channel. Mm-hmm. And he's telling me about, I'm like, man, that thing way out there. We ain't getting no hurricane. Man, I tell you, that Friday came, and that thing about to hit Galveston. I said, oh, golly. So for you, the days leading up to it, was you preparing for it? Was you like,
Well, I think we were all preparing because, I mean, if you live here in Houston, you know good and well that hurricanes are a possibility during hurricane season especially. And we, of course, had our forecasters and meteorologists looking at the models. But I don't think anyone predicted that it was going to be as bad as it was. So, I mean, I'm like, okay, I'm new to Houston. Do I really need to take this seriously? Because you know how it is when you live in New Orleans or you live in Houston, people are like, oh, yeah, I'm going to ride this out. Like, you know, been there, done this. It wasn't that bad last time. So this was to the point where I think as we started getting into day one and day two, like, of the storm really kind of hitting the coast, I think people were like, okay, this is one we should not really take lightly. We should really take it seriously. And so, I mean, I saw people who had lived in Houston all their lives like, yeah, like, this is for real.
This was bad. And people forget, too, we got blessed, too, because what hit Beaumont, we already had. So I remember when Beaumont got hit, originally, what Beaumont got, we were supposed to get on top of what we already had.
Yeah, like Beaumont and like Port Arthur, some of those areas, they really got hit. And because Houston is the main city, obviously a lot of the focus is on here. But those other cities in those other, you know, those coastal communities, those are the areas that really got torn apart that sometimes people don't talk about enough.
Right. That was pretty still,
man,
bad.
Hurricane Harvey, man. It's still one of those things, like, people still recovering. And you think about it, it's been a couple years now, almost a couple years, but people are still, some people still not back in their homes. So it's crazy.
Right. And I read something, too. You told me this. I didn't know your brother is in the band The Internet.
Yeah, man. My little brother Matthew, he actually founded The Internet. He and Sid started the group years ago, and it's crazy because sometimes people will say, "Is that your brother?" I'm like, "Is that your real brother?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's my little brother. I like would hold him growing up. Like that's my real brother." So I'm really proud of him. They just were nominated for a Grammy a couple years ago. They just got off a world tour. They were on Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, every time I look up and he's texting me, they're doing something different. And so I'm so proud of him because we all grew up in Atlanta, and he would literally be playing music to like 3-4 in the morning every night, like making beats, singing, playing instruments. And we would literally get in fights all the time because he was just like, that was his life growing up. Like, he honestly didn't care. My brother didn't care about school, and he didn't care much about anything. He wanted to make music. So to see him all these years later doing what he loves and like traveling the world and touring the world, I mean, I'm so proud of him. And he kind of pinches himself sometimes too and says, like, this is what I wanted to do since I was a little kid. But yeah, so that's my brother, and I'm so proud of the band and all that they're doing right now.
How did they get together? Do you know that full story to it?
Well, I mean, it's a long story, but basically they met on the internet, like through MySpace, and you know, he and Sid connected first. It was just Matthew and Sid. They were the internet. And then they added on the band members as they went on.
Sid's the lead singer?
Yeah, Sid. Okay. Yeah, she's the lead singer. And the thing I love about the internet, a lot of people don't know, is even as they've kind of grown and, you know, gotten their name out there, like, they all are, like, just really nice, genuine people. And they're all, like, friends. Like, you know, because a lot of times you're in a group and there's people who are, like, competing with each other or jealous. Right. They are all just so tight. And they all, like, support each other in their solo projects and everything. So yeah, right. I like to brag on my brother because that's my little brother, and I'm so proud of like where he's kind of climbed to.
And you get all free tickets to the concerts.
Yeah, I get free tickets, but it's funny because sometimes I'm like, hey Matt, can I get like 4 or 5 of my friends? And he's like, you have to limit it because sometimes, you know, everybody's calling you up trying to get tickets. So
yeah,
but he always looks out for me.
And then your older brother Mitch. And Outkast.
Yeah, man. You know, so I kind of come from a musical family. My older brother Mitch, he was into music too. So he worked with Outkast for a long time. He actually worked at Stankonia, their studio. Mm-hmm. He did A&R for them, which is artist and repertoire. Also worked with Janelle Monáe. So he started with Janelle Monáe when like she was in Atlanta, like no one knew who she was. Like she was brand new kind of to the scene, except for like, you know, some people in Atlanta did. And so he worked with her for many years, and so now he works at BMI, which is like, you know, they do a lot of the licensing and publishing with artists. So I'm proud of both of them. So we all, you know, really support each other in everything that we do.
And so you got two people that's in music, and then you're the guy that's on the anchor. So yeah. I guess you was in the middle. So it's like,
yeah, I guess I'm the middle child. It's crazy because I grew up playing the piano, and I also played the alto saxophone, but somehow I didn't end up in the music industry. I don't know why or how, but I always wanted to do what I do, and they always wanted to do what they do. So they're in music, I'm in television, but we all support each other. That's the thing. Like, my mom always taught us when we were younger that even though we're all very different and doing different things, and like when one of us is succeeding and one of us is winning, like we're all winning. So they'll hit me up if they see a story I did, and I'll hit them up if I see something they're doing. So it's kind of cool to have brothers that you know, we all kind of, you know, we are our own little fraternity. We right. really support each other.
So they ask you like, hey, we want you to feature on this internet song. Would you do it?
You got to ask my brother that, because my brother, I don't know, he probably wouldn't even let me be on the album. He probably wouldn't let me be on the album. I mean, yeah.
He wouldn't even like.
Yeah, yeah. He probably wouldn't think I'm cool enough. So I don't know. Yeah. They makes fun of me sometimes when he hears me, like, you know, because they're in a whole, I mean, that's a whole different world, you know, the internet. I'm like in a suit and talking all proper, and, you know, he's, you know.
That's a cold suit, man. That's
appreciate
a,
it, man. Thank
that's,
you, man.
That's a sick suit. That's suit like it would break my bank account. That's
nah,
type of suit, dog.
No, nah, man, it's funny. I appreciate that, but it's a little bold. I thought my boss was going to be like, man, it's a little blue. It's a little bright. But she hadn't said anything yet. But, you know, I just got this made over with my boy in Thailand. I got a tailor that I work with over there, and he hooked me up, and it's crazy because if you go overseas sometimes, everything's just so much cheaper. Like, you right. go to places, and you're like, what? You telling me I can get this suit made for $200 custom? Yeah. And over here, it would be like $1,200 easy.
Right.
So, anyway, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, cause I need a couple more suits. I Nah, man. I try to get this. I forgot the name of the company. I got this suit from. Man, the brand. I think it's both. Man, I don't want to mess it up. Start with a B. I don't want to mess it up. But I try to get. I have to get sailor suits because my shoulders are so broad.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't wear a suit.
That's
I'm
right.
Like,
yeah.
I can't even wear suits.
Yeah, it's just crazy when you got like long arms, you got broad shoulders, or like or something. You know, long legs or something off, and then you just can't buy them off the rack.
You can't buy them off the rack. You gotta get it tailored, and you gotta wait like a few days or something.
Yeah.
Like,
and then when you get a suit made for you, it's like hella expensive, so it's crazy.
Yeah. So I'm asking you this. How important, since we're 4 months away, how important is NAPJ, not just to you, but for people that's trying to be, you know, journalists that's in college or high school maybe?
I mean, NABJ is so important for me because even still, like, people say, oh, well, you working in Houston, you good. You know, NABJ is where you continually make those connections to get ahead in the industry. Because sometimes we think that, you know, we get so into our own little small community. Like, oh, I mean, I know Akil, I know you. Like, you. But at the end of the day, you really need to know people all across the country, because there's going to come a point in time where you're up for a job in St. Louis or up for a job in New Orleans. And it's somebody that you met at NABJ 5 years ago, you be like, hey, you know, they can give you a recommendation.
Yep.
And so I tell people, NABJ is not about just the seminars. It's, to me, about the connections. And, like, I have friends that I met 8 years ago at NABJ, and now we talk every other day.
How long have you been going?
Man, I've been going for about 10 years. And Atlanta was my first one. Atlanta, NABJ. So I was like, I got to have an NABJ experience in my home city.
Right.
And, like, you know, like, I met Theo, your boy Theo, that we both are cool with now, like, through NABJ. Like, you meet people along the way, and that's what's cool about NABJ. I know you have a good time there, too.
So. Oh, my God. I love it. And it's not even just because of the party and all that. It's the fact that I'm meeting so many people. I remember when I first went, it was Minnesota 2015, and Theo told me about it. Like I said, Theo plays a huge role in my career right now. And he told me about it. He didn't believe I was going.
Oh, for real?
Because I was like, yo, I started writing, and I was going to Texas Southern when I first got there. He didn't believe it. The day he told me is the day I bought my plane ticket. And I showed him, I said, man, I told you, now you're going every
you're not going to miss a beat. Yeah.
And it's like, man, it's like the people I've met, the connections I made, you know, it's just great, you know. And
it's a little overwhelming, too, because it's like, man. Like, all
the first
people,
time I went, it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
Man, it was
a lot. But then when you go back after that, it's just...
It gets easy.
Yeah, because every time you go back, you know more people, and you feel more comfortable, and you're more confident.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Man, I strongly suggest people to go to NABJ. That is, it's the best time. You get to meet so many people. And it's like, I almost feel like an outsider sometimes, because, like, most of the people there is, like, news anchors.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm, like, the 1% of that's, like, radio. And, like, podcasting, it's like...
Yeah. It's a little weird because, the TV people, a lot of them walk around like, I'm someone.
Yeah,
so
I'm like, man,
I'm
loosen
like,
up,
let
man.
That go. Like, who cares what market you work in? And,
yeah.
And so that is one of the things. I love NABJ, and most people know that, but I don't like how sometimes it's very much about where you work, and I'm in a top 10 market, and where are you again? And you're in market 500, even though there's not 500, like... You know, people like to kind of have this hierarchy.
Yeah.
And so the big market folks hang together. And I'm like, you come to NABJ to give back. And so honestly, that's why I go still, because I remember there were people who I would admire. I would go to NABJ and I'm like, oh, my goodness, that's Byron Pitts and that's Craig Melvin and that's DeMarco Morgan. I would be looking at these guys like, these are people who are where I want to be.
Right.
And so now that I've been able to move up in market and in, you know, my career, I go back because a lot of these young guys are now trying to – talk to me and get my advice. So it's like, you can't just get what you need out of NABJ and be like, all right, deuces, I'm gone. You got to kind of then go back and pour into the organization.
Right. And it's the last 2 years. The last 2 years I went, Detroit and New Orleans, I didn't go to like the panels like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of paying for the career, because I didn't have the money to pay it. Now I'm going to the panels for the first time.
Yeah.
And like a couple of years. Last time I went was like the DC one. And it's like, man, like, you know, me personally, each year I went was for a different reason. First year, overwhelming, trying to just learn the experience, learn the convention. Second time was like, okay, I just had a radio show at KCOH. Let me show this to different people in the career fair, see what they think. Some they liked it. Cool. My mission was complete. Last, New Orleans was, all right, let me just come here, you know, see people I meet. That's it.
Right.
Last year, same thing. Now, graduating, have my brand now, have my show.
Now you have something to
to show. And it's not like I'm trying to find a job somewhere. I'm comfortable with this. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable showing people, like, look, there's money to be made in podcasting. People don't know that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, let me just make a real, my best of highlights. You know what I'm saying? My highlights of the show, just show it to people. Like I said, most of the people there is news anchors.
Yeah.
So the most they can do is look at and be like, oh, okay, I like this.
But it's the connections that you make, like, because you're going to meet people who are in your city. Like, you'll meet other people from Houston that you may not know already, and or people from other cities who are doing what you're doing. There's another Akil in you know, Atlanta or New York or somebody. You know what I mean? So that's what it's about, making those connections. And you're not going to get that all the time by just staying in your little bubble. And so many people don't want to go. I'm like, yeah, it's expensive, but it might be worth it.
Man, you could talk to anybody. It's a conversation starter.
Oh, yeah.
Very. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can just be on the elevator and be like, oh, okay, you go to North Carolina, you make some joke, Tar Heel, whatever. Yeah,
and then there you know. That's a connection, somebody you're going to keep in touch with for years, possibly. So,
for real. And I love it. I love it. Before we go, any advice to anybody that's listening to this?
Any advice in terms of just like?
Whoever want to be a journalist, somebody that's in high school, in college right now, that just needs some advice right now.
Man, there's so many things I would say. I guess the biggest advice I would give is polish everything about yourself. I think so many times people go into wanting to be a journalist and they just say, okay, I'm going to learn how to, you know, write, or I'm going to learn how to do live shots. Like, make sure every aspect of your game, I compare it to sort of like being a basketball player. You got to learn how to, you know, play defense. You got to learn how to shoot well. You got to learn how to, you know, rebound well. Like, and so I think with journalists, like, learn everything and be good at everything. One of my good friends and mentors says, be undeniable. Be so good at every aspect of your game. Make sure you look the part. Like, make sure you know, you stand fit. Make if that's what it takes. Make sure that you are watching the news and seeing how it's done. If you're a journalist or whatever it is you want to do, whether you're in radio, print, I just think you got to kind of like be good at everything, as opposed to just trying to be good at one thing.
Right.
That'd be my advice. I don't know. That's what's helped me.
Yeah. We're coming back on me. This is Akil Williams, Gal Media, ESPN 975, host of the Real Deal with Akil podcast, sponsored by Petite Law Firm, 281-227-7883. Real Deal with Akil, out.
He's taking my job, y'all. He's going to take my job. See, you heard that voice? I'm gone.